Zero Waste is a set of principles focused on preventing waste of any kind. The goal of the movement is to avoid sending trash to landfills, incinerators, oceans, or any other part of the environment. It encourages the creation of a life cycle of resources and products so that they're repurposed and reused. Today, we'll talk about what's involved with going truly zero waste and why some believe it's inaccessible and how individuals and communities can get closer to that ideal. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. This hour, as a part of our week-long coverage on environmental topics during Earth Week, we'll talk to local experts about how they're looking at zero waste goals in households and in the region, and we'll explore where recycling and composting fits into that equation. Those conversations are coming up. It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. You may have heard that one way to take care of the planet is to practice zero waste. But what exactly does that mean, and how feasible is it for everyone? All this Earth Week, our show is diving into environmental topics, and today we'll explore the concept of zero waste, which includes everything from recycling to composting. But most importantly, it's about consuming less and not throwing anything away. The concept isn't new. There was a zero waste movement during the early 2010s, which eventually fell by the wayside, due in part to some critics calling it unrealistic and exclusionary. And while it seems lofty and unattainable, environmental experts say it may not be impossible, and it's also imperative, actually. A study published earlier this year by the United Nations Environment Program projected that global municipal waste generation will grow to a staggering 3.8 billion tons by the year 2050. All that waste impacts our environment and also our public health. So today we're going to spend most of the hour discussing what's involved with going zero waste, and we'll learn about how local organizations and individuals are taking steps to address waste reduction in their communities. But first, are you someone that lives a zero waste lifestyle, or you aspire to? You can call us with your questions or thoughts, 866-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org, or you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. Joining me now in studio for this conversation, I am joined by Doreen Schreiber, business recycling specialist at the Cuyahoga County Solid Waste District. Doreen is also a certified zero waste business associate with the U.S. Zero Waste Business Council. Doreen, very glad to have you in studio this morning. Thank you for coming in.
Jenny, thank you for having me here today.
Joining us by phone, we have Ross Widener. He is the chair of the core team at the Summit of Sustainability Alliance in Summit County. He's also the strategic project manager in the sustainability office at Bridgestone Americas. Ross, thanks so much for calling in.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much.
And finally, we have Dr. Fred Michel, professor at The Ohio State University College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences in Worcester. He is also the chair of the Sustainability Committee on campus and president of the Wayne County Sustainable Energy Network. Dr. Michel, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Doreen, let's first define what zero waste means. The Zero Waste International Alliance has a definition. Can you tell us what it is and how this was determined as the standard?
Well, I'm going to skip the long definition, and I'm going to get straight into the very simple definition of zero waste is 90% waste diversion without burning or burying.
I like that. So tell us kind of in your words what that means.
What that means is you're not going to recycle your way to zero waste. It's just not possible. Zero waste focuses mostly on the avoidance. It's waste avoidance. When we think of recycling, it's really kind of lower on the totem pole. Recycling is lower on the totem pole. So, for example, that means with the waste hierarchy, you know, you think reduce, reuse, recycle. When you're thinking zero waste, it's a different hierarchy. It's rethink and redesign. So, for example, I do presentations to industrial designers and packaging engineers to tell them how to produce packaging that would be, you know, more recyclable, let's say. So that's the very beginning. And then if you cannot redesign something, then how can you reduce waste? Because again, zero waste is mostly about waste avoidance. If you can't reduce it, then you have to figure out, well, can I reuse it somehow in a process? Can I make it circle back? And can I reuse it in a process, or can I give it away? And then if you can't do any of those, then you have to think about recycling and composting. And most of us know what that is. And composting is, you know, most of the time we're talking about food waste, yard waste, things like that. Material recovery is next. Can we put it back into a manufacturing process somehow? And then if you can't do that, how do we, you know, what do we do with it next? Does it go waste to energy? Do we have to put it in the landfill? So with the definition of zero waste, again, I said 90% waste diversion without burning or burying. Now, that means that the last 10%, if you can't do anything else with it, if you can prove that you can't do anything else with it, then you can either send it waste to energy, or you can send it to, you know, the landfill. I want to clarify something, though, that with zero waste, that if you are taking 50% of your waste and you're burning it, or, you know, and you're recycling the rest, and you say, I have 90% waste aversion, we consider that greenwashing, because you're not following the principles. You're burning things, and you cannot, you could have done something else with them. So we have to be careful about that.
Okay, let's bring Fred into the conversation. Doreen is talking about what zero waste means to her, and by the standards of those practicing or creating goals. How do you see zero waste practices, and how is there a difference between zero waste and sustainability?
Yeah, those are good questions. I agree that what we need to do to achieve this goal of zero waste is to change part of the system that we use to process waste. And that includes looking at different materials that we use. For example, we've done some studies both at Ohio State University, where we have a zero waste goal by 2025, which we've been trying to meet, and also some local projects, which we've done, for example, with community meals and that kind of thing, where we've actually tried to design the system so that there are no materials that become landfill up front. So, for example, when we're doing like a breakfast in the community, we don't use the little plastic tubs containing bits of butter that have aluminum covers on them. We actually create sliced bits of butter for people to select. We don't serve anything on materials that are not either recyclable or compostable. So at the end of the day, you get a waste stream from that entire event, which doesn't contain materials that must be, you know, must be landfilled. Of course, there's some stuff brought in from outside. And at the university, we've tried to do that same approach in making it the same effort to compost, recycle, or landfill materials. So, for example, you don't have a trash can, which is more easily to access than something like a recycling bin, which is out in the garage somewhere in a different building. You put the recycling, the composting, and the trash collection facilities all on an equal footing so that you can choose to select where those materials go, and that reduces contamination in the waste stream as well. Now, you asked the question of what's the difference about sustainability and zero waste. When you're looking at sustainability, you're doing sort of a life cycle assessment, it's called, where you're assessing all of the impacts of the waste stream and the practices that you're employing. You're looking at both carbon emissions from those processes, CO2 emissions, how they differ between different practices, and then also impacts on the environment, whether it's acidification or impacts on the natural environment from using those different processes. And in some cases, you know, choosing one option that may be a zero waste option may be have a higher carbon footprint or a higher environmental impact than another. So it's important to look at that. Those assessments also are very much affected by the boundaries of the system that you're looking at. So you really have to have a large boundary to look at all the potential impacts of the practices you're employing and the practices you're trying to use and change.
Ross, tell us more about the Summit of Sustainability Alliance, or SALSA, and their responsible consumption team. What are your goals you're working to achieve in the county, and how do they relate to zero waste?
Absolutely. So SOSA is a convener of organizations from across different sectors. So we have for-profit, nonprofit, educational, and government membership. And we just provide a platform for people who want to come together and work on sustainability goals in teams. And so responsible consumption and zero waste is one focus area that SOSA has identified of interest to multiple of our members. And so what we want to do is really bring people together and help share these best practices that the other guests are talking about and help people to achieve, you know, a zero waste mentality and work towards those kinds of targets by being able to partner up and more efficiently operationalize the systems.
Okay, so we've kind of got the definition of zero waste down. I think for myself and for our listeners, the idea sounds so hard to achieve. And I know that there are cities working on zero waste, and it means something different, whether it's a region, a municipality, or an individual. But if you're talking about using a product that ultimately is not going to go into a landfill, I guess my question would be, what is the starting point? How can an individual even start to attempt to be zero waste? And does it start with the products that you are using and to reconsider those? I'm going to ask you that, Doreen.
Well, first of all, I want to make clear that I focus on the business community. So I don't focus on individuals as much.
So how can a business look at being zero waste?
So with regards to a business, I need to tell the businesses the first thing is to, you're not going to recycle yourself out of zero waste. So the first thing we do look at, and the people there may not understand that some of the things they're already doing are zero waste. Let's say that you've set your copiers, your printers. We have a no print policy. Well, before you had this no print policy, you look at how much, you know, office paper were you buying? And all of a sudden you have this no print policy and you're doing waste avoidance. So what you do is you weigh the amount of paper you have avoided buying. And zero waste, to determine it, to calculate it, is by weight, either in pounds or tons, according to the certification that I have through TRUE, which is Total Resource Use and Efficiency. So there are some things that people are already doing, waste avoidance, that they're not even aware of. It could be grass cycling, meaning the building has a landscaper, and they mow and they leave the clippings on the lawn. That is waste avoidance, just like that. So there's some things that people don't even think about that they're already doing.
And Ross, I'll go back to you. I'm curious, do you have a thought on how the individual approaches zero waste? And does it start with the very beginning of, I want to buy straws, so can I buy biodegradable straws as opposed to plastic ones, which are now being banned in areas? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that you opened the segment talking about kind of shrinking the top line and not bringing future waste into your life if you can avoid it. So that procurement part of the process is absolutely the place to start thinking about that. And I think especially on the individual level, you have to think about not letting perfect be the enemy of progress.
Right.
So if you can start thinking in that mindset and start working towards, well, what can I change about my life? What do I find myself throwing away often? And how can I find an alternative to bring in that can be reusable or, you know, has some better end of life use than going into the trash can? And so I think if you just start the regular practice of looking for those small opportunities, you can start working yourself to a better and better state over time.
And Fred, you know, I do think we've already kind of touched on this, but when we talk about going to zero waste and the fact that recycling and composting really are kind of on the bottom of that pyramid, we also don't want to vilify those practices. So where in your mind do they sit in the importance of being a good steward to the environment and attempting to help the waste issue on the planet?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of wastes that we all generate that are difficult to avoid. One of those is food waste and food scraps. And sometimes we think about food waste as being food that you didn't eat on your plate. But often, it's more often parts of food that aren't edible. You know, an apple core, a banana peel, some paper that's been soiled with food and that kind of material. So it's difficult to actually reduce those materials that you're eating. Most of the food scraps that we have ends up in the trash and goes to the landfill. So for most people, that's the fate of that material. So there are some practices you can do to try to reduce that. One is backyard composting, which is effective at returning that material to soil. Essentially, you're recycling the material back into a soil that can be used in your own garden or your own yard. And another is to try to work towards collection of organics in municipalities, which many cities practice, not very many, but they would have, instead of a two-bin collection of waste in the city, they would have a three-bin, where you're collecting organics or mixed organics, which would have leaves and food scraps in one bin, recyclables, or maybe multiple recyclables in another bin, and landfill trash in another. And those kinds of programs require really policy and citizens asking for those programs within their municipalities. Typically, they cost more than just a regular type of recycling program. But if you, for example, put it in your city's request for proposals for what kind of waste management you want your city to have, companies will bid for those programs.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation or have a question for any of our experts, call 866-578-0903, or you can email us at soi@ideastream.org. We've already received a lot of emails, and one of the questions does have to do with how people can act when, let's say, the processes aren't available to them. Heather wrote, "I live in Cleveland in an apartment building that doesn't recycle. I save glass, plastic, paper, and cardboard and take it to bins at Cleveland's Recycle Center on Rich Road. How can I get details about what I can recycle? I read that not all plastic and cardboard are recyclable. And are there centers that people can go to if, let's say, some recyclables are not being picked up at your apartment during your nodding?"
Yes, because one of the things I am responsible for is to help apartment buildings and their tenants recycle and to recycle properly. If you live in the city of Cleveland in an apartment building and you do not have recycling, on our website, there is a multifamily housing recycling guide, which will tell you where all the drop-offs are. Now, there's drop-offs at 55th and Carnegie and the Ridge Road transfer station, just like the listener said. But there are, for drop-offs, Repeat Glass has drop-offs in different parts of the city, so you can go to repeatglass.com. For paper and cardboard, there are Paper Retriever and Integrity Fiber free drop-off bins all over the county. You just need to call like Royal Oak Recycling or Integrity Fiber, tell them the zip code that you live in, and then they will tell you where the drop-offs are. Aluminum cans, those can go to the fire stations. Most of the fire stations, if not all, have those. And some of the cities have drop-offs for all residents within their city at the service department. So it depends on where you live. But you can also call our main number, and we will instruct you in more detail.
David wrote a pretty lengthy email from Cleveland Heights, which we appreciate, David. You seem very into being a steward of the environment, and I know right now he's driving down to south of Canton to get some styrofoam recycled. He writes, one other thing that I want to talk about is composting, including using Rust Belt riders. It saves the environment from food waste turning into methane or carbon dioxide. Every little bit helps, but we are in a plastics crisis around the world. That's from David in Cleveland Heights. Thanks for writing it. Fred, I want to ask you, I think sometimes what you read can be confusing because we all, again, we're trying to recycle. We heard about the China crisis and the fact that the recycling market had bottomed out. But then there's good infrastructure in Ohio. And I hear even recycling plants that are going up. So what is your thoughts as kind of an expert in this whole world about recycling and what people should be doing?
Well, excuse me. So we're starting with food scraps, as I started before with. We do have capabilities of composting those materials centrally at facilities nearby towns. And what it requires is really collection. The part of the philosophy of zero waste is really that it's an equal effort to dispose of these materials. So driving food scraps, you know, to a composting facility miles away or styrofoam to Canton from Cleveland, what we need to work on is recycling programs that can collect these materials equally for the landfill, for the recycling, and for composting. And that requires policy, really, changes. 30% of our landfill materials are food scraps, which, as the caller said, do produce methane as they're degraded in landfills. And most of that methane isn't captured in the methane capture systems within the landfill because it degrades before those systems are installed. So composting, which is an aerobic process, although it does emit some amounts of methane and other gases, it's much less than you would have typically coming from a landfill. So it's an advantage from that standpoint. So there's both home composting and central composting that can be done. With recycling of plastic, I mean, what strikes me often is our conversion, you know, I don't know when it was 20 years ago, to everyone needing to have a plastic bottle of water. And that's an incredible waste of plastic. And yeah, it's actually led to the development of industries along the Ohio River that take ethane and other gases from our fracked gases to produce those plastics. At the same time as every building by code must have a drinking fountain with clean water. And so it's kind of trying to reduce the use of unneeded materials like those plastics can help reduce the problem with the plastic contamination.
Since we're talking about composting, we did have a listener patiently waiting on the line. Her call dropped out, but it was Eleni from Lakewood who was asking about, you know, is there the prospect of cities implementing some sort of municipality-wide composting program as opposed to people having to pay and hire someone private like Rust Belt Riders? And I believe we've got Rebecca on the line from Cleveland with a similar thought. So, Rebecca, go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. I'm so glad you're having this conversation. And since Lenny had asked a question about citywide composting, I will kind of pivot to the other part of my question, which I hope isn't far off base. But I was wondering if anyone has any awareness of like where the recycling situation is, particularly in reference to like facilities closer by, you know, that it, I feel like it shouldn't have to be a concern, like that a deal with China fell through when we have like recycling plants in, I know, like Portage County, and I don't know where else they are, unfortunately, but I feel like we have a little bit of a lack of transparency because I know since the opt-in program for recycling in the city of Cleveland, when the recycling truck goes down the street, I see all bins go into it, whether they have the sticker or not. So I feel like I'm concerned there's a lack of transparency between the city and the residents on what the policies are. And I was wondering if any of the guests have any insight into that.
Ross, I'm wondering if you have a thought on that, because I do think that a lot of local cities were stuck in binds when the whole China debacle did happen. But that was a reality. And I do think that essentially America has been scrambling to create our own recycling or compost. Doreen is nodding her head no. So maybe what, you know, Doreen, if you want to take that question, what is your thoughts on the fact that are there recycling plants? Is there an infrastructure that can support our recycling here in Ohio, here in Northeast Ohio? And what about the perception that when China collapsed, you know, recycling collapsed?
I really think that we need to put the China sword conversation away. The Midwest was not affected by it as much as the East and West Coast, where things would go overseas. We have an enormous recycling structure in the Midwest, so we were not as affected by it. I'm doing presentations on a daily basis where I show a slide with all the recycling plants for glass, for plastics, you know, for cardboard, for paper. Pratt Industries just built some recycling plants, one in Wapakoneta, Ohio. So I don't think that we need to be concerned anymore about the infrastructure for recycling. It is there. The items are needed. So I'd like to put that China sword conversation to rest.
I am going to get Ross's response, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we'll continue this conversation about zero waste, composting, recycling. I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. We'll be right back. I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. In honor of Earth Day and Week, we are having a week-long series of conversations about the environment. Today, we're focusing on zero waste and all the processes that are a part of that, including recycling, including composting, and then just refusing to use all the products available to us because they're not good for the environment. I'm joined with Doreen Schreiber from the Cuyahoga County Solid Waste District, Ross Widener with the Summit of Sustainability Alliance, Fred Michel, who is a professor at Ohio State University on the Worcester campus. And Ross, I said I'd go to you, and I want to do that. You know, I'm curious about your thoughts when it comes to where the responsibility lies. And with that question of where do businesses sit on being good environmental stewards of the planet? And I know that you have firsthand experience with Bridgestone. So want to tell me about your approach with that company.
Absolutely. And it sounds like my dog in the background might want to tell you her approach
We'll take his or her perspective too.
Right. Bridgestone has what we call our E8 commitment, which is how we message, you know, our commitment to society more broadly. One of those E's is ecology, where we seek to be in harmony with nature in the areas where we operate. So we have high-level global corporate commitments to be good stewards of the environment because we want to continue to operate in perpetuity in a society that is also operating in perpetuity, right? That's sustainability from a business perspective. And so I think as far as responsibility, it's important to recognize that there is responsibility along every step of the value chain of a circular economy. And so even, you know, the caller was asking about sort of some of the global forces affecting recycling markets. I think it's important at the individual level not to get depressed about those things and to continue to do the right thing on your own part and let things that are out of your control be handled by the powers that be, you know, outside of your control, right? So keep putting your things in the right bins, keep getting your things to the right location, and then, you know, the rest of the system also needs to take responsibility to process and convert that correctly. So from an organization like Bridgestone, we do that by creating clear programs on our campuses so that teammates know where to put different kinds of materials and make sure that those are getting out through our waste management processes to the appropriate locations.
We got an email from, where is that email? From Jeff in Willoughby, who writes, I get frustrated when I hear environmentalists put the onus on individuals when the real problem lies with the corporate polluters and the products they use, which create the real waste, then want individuals to take care of disposing of it. Individuals can do their part, but that represents a drop in the waste bucket, plastics and packaging being the biggest problem. And so there seems to be this tension because I think we are collectively trying to say, individual involvement does count, and every little bit does help. And you don't have to be perfect, and you can have a lot of waste one day. Well, I'm not saying you can, but you know, it, you don't have to have the ideal of perfection. But then Jeff's got a great point. You know, we have so many products, so much waste. You go into a grocery store and you just, I mean, if you're looking from an environmental perspective, there's just so much waste to be had. So what about policymakers? And what about, you know, the big movers and shakers and the products that create? And, you know, is there pressure on them to create products that can be part of a zero waste solution? Doreen?
I'm glad that question was asked. There's something called extended producer responsibility laws. There's, I think, over 70 in the United States. You can look up extended producer responsibility and find out where they're all located. Unfortunately, there are none in Ohio. What that means as an extended producer responsibility law is it puts the onus on the producer to find an end-of-life solution for that product, because right now we're a take-make-waste society, and whoever has the product at the end is like, what do I do with it? So I'm hoping, you mentioned policy, I would advise individuals to call the marketing departments at these corporations, because they do listen. And I do think some of them are making the effort. Even if they don't have a take-back, they may have a way to, you know, recycle the product or tell you how to do that. So definitely be in touch with the marketing departments to put some pressure on companies to do the right thing.
Let's go ahead and take a call from Bob calling in from Cleveland. Bob, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. My question is, like, when I'm in the metro parks and stuff, you know, I see a lot of garbage cans, but I don't necessarily see, like, recycle, like an identical can next to it for recycling. And I was just wondering, is there any movement to try to get more availability, you know, in public places for recycling?
Since you're working kind of in this region, Doreen, I'm going to go back to you.
There are recycling bins. You may not be in an area where they're located. We do give grants to nonprofits. And again, I would, if you want to contact me, I think we'll have information on how to contact our office at the end. I would like you to contact me directly to discuss where you are not seeing them. And then we could probably go from there, because they do have, depending on where you are, there is some recycling going on.
Fred, I want to spend a bit of time with you talking about your region. You know, we've done several segments of recent about Worcester and Wayne County, and I know it's this amalgam of huge corporations and manufacturing. I know there's big food companies out there. And then you've got these small farms focused on sustainability, and you've got a couple of colleges. So it really seems like it's a convergence of a lot of different kind of interests and practices. So how do you see the campus's role when it comes to trying to teach, you know, the community to be better environmental stewards when it comes to waste and reusing products?
Well, I think it's as an example is the way we have to do that. And we do have a goal of being zero waste by 2025, which we're trying our best to meet that through various practices. We did a survey of our whole campus, which is kind of similar to, as you described, to our county, which is a mixture of agriculture, industry, commercial interest as well, and residents. And what we needed that survey of our campus, we found that when we include things like manure and other materials like that that are generated from agriculture, we're already zero waste. We divert more than 90% of our waste stream from our campus. But when we focus in on the campus itself and exclude the agricultural parts of the campus, where we have animals and research going on and field plots and that kind of thing, where we can recycle materials, organic materials, then we're more like 25 to 30%. And so we've aimed at attacking all of the different, first quantifying the materials that are generated. And that's very important to quantify what is actually generated and where you can make the biggest impact on trying to divert materials. And the other is to equalize, as I've said, the effort required to landfill, recycle, or compost materials so that we're not just doing things, you know, because it's easy to put in the trash can at my feet than it is to walk it out to wherever the recycling bin is, or drive it to the next city to put it into a bin for the recyclables. So we've tried to place those materials all together and, in fact, remove trash cans from offices so that you have to take your materials to the central facility in the building and decide which trash can it goes into. And I think that philosophy and approach, and as well at the Metro Parks, having the capability of putting materials into different bins that are appropriate, works, I think, a little bit better. And just one comment on policy as well. In the early 90s, Ohio had a policy passed a policy where yard trimmings were banned from landfills. And that essentially led to the development of composting facilities in every county. And so when we look at the rest of the system, in a democracy, the rest of the system is us. And we need to tell our legislators, our mayors, our city councils that we want these types of systems to give us the environmental benefits of recycling.
Let's take a call from Jim in Sheffield Village. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, you know, I'm very encouraged by this program. I'm practicing an increasing amount of recycling, and, I find it a really rewarding hobby. But I did have a question on the garbage disposal. Where does that fall in the spectrum of good to bad when it comes to recycling? Because, I've got one in my sink, and, sometimes I'm reluctant to use it, but then I'm wondering that, is this good or bad?
I could take that.
Yeah, please do. Fred?
Okay, so when you put it in the garbage disposal, it goes to a wastewater treatment plant, and there's two types of plants. Some of them use oxygen to aerate the material, which is very energy intensive. Our system in Worcester actually is an anaerobic digester. So all of that material goes to a digester. Methane is created and captured, and the methane is used to power the plant. There's actually excess energy produced at our wastewater treatment plant that goes to then also power the plant that takes water out of the ground to produce fresh water. And the remaining material is a liquid, which is called biosolids, which is to some degree dried and then land applied to commodity crops. So things like corn and soybeans, not to food crops. So to a certain extent, that material is recycled. And that happens in both of those systems. So the waste, the solid liquid waste remaining after the processing is generally land applied. Some of it is landfilled in some cities that don't have the capacity to get that material onto agricultural land, but the nutrients for the most part are recycled.
Okay, that I think was a good answer. Hopefully Jim is satisfied. You know, we did get a return email from Rebecca who called in but didn't think her question was answered. She wrote, I agree we have infrastructure in Ohio to deal with recyclables. What I'm asking is whether the city of Cleveland is actually using any of this recycling infrastructure. I am concerned that the recycling bins I put on the curb are not actually connected to that infrastructure, or whether there is transparency from the city on our recycling policy. And again, so Doreen, I do think this falls into that category of when cities were kind of tap dancing and trying to figure out how to recycle items that they had taught the community for the last 30 years to do. And whether someone who lives in the community can get really clear answers about, is this worth my effort? Is it effective? If I put something in the recycle bin, will it get recycled?
If you put the right items as instructed from your sticker that is on your recycling bin for the city of Cleveland, the items will get recycled. They need to be clean and dry. If your recycling is way too contaminated because you're putting things like styrofoam clamshells and clear clamshells and things that can't be recycled, if it's very contaminated, it may not be picked up, or it may contaminate some other recyclables. The city of Cleveland picks up from its residents, and they go to Rumpke, the Rumpke plant in Medina. where there's a pre-sort, and then other items are sent to Rumpke's plant over in the Columbus area. It is very worthwhile. There is a lot of transparency in the city of Cleveland with regards to what is and isn't recyclable. Ren Brumfeld is in charge of this program. He is doing a phenomenal job, and the last I had heard, there is only a 15% contamination rate. So yes, if you put the right items in the bin, they will get recycled. If you have questions as to what those right items are, please feel free to call our office directly and or go on our website, either one, and we can explain to you what is and isn't recyclable for the city of Cleveland. But we work very closely with all the communities, and we are very confident things are getting recycled properly.
I would love to hear from you if you want to ask a question or participate in the conversation. I'm going to read this very slowly for listener Natalie. The number is 866-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org. We're going to take one final break, and then we'll return with this conversation. And I would love to hit on, we've received several emails asking about restaurants and businesses like that and how they're participating in moving towards a zero-waste solution. I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. We'll be right back. I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. We are talking about zero waste and how individuals, businesses, and policymakers can attempt to reduce the amount of waste that is going into landfills all around the world. I'm joined with Doreen Schreiber from the Cuyahoga County Solid Waste District, Ross Widener with the Summit of Sustainability Alliance, and Dr. Fred Michel with the Ohio State University College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Sciences. I want to read an email from James, who says, restaurants and bars represent a large and concentrated volume of food waste, glass, bottles, and aluminum cans. Is it possible to incentivize the redirecting of this waste to be recycled and composted? And I'd like to add to James's question about if there is policy or kind of direction from the government about how businesses use and consume not only food, but resources to eat the food on. I wonder, Ross, if you have any thoughts on that.
I sure do. So, and it's really a good point because as we're talking to different businesses and organizations who want to get involved with composting or have forayed into that space, the number one thing we see is they say, oh, we focus on the kitchen or on the food service operations where it can more easily be controlled than trying to get the general population to do things right on the dining room side and prevent contamination. So there's a big focus and a big opportunity, I think, in the restaurant and the food service space. So that's really what SOSA is aiming to do, is to give businesses a place to convene and form kind of an ecosystem approach that can do this efficiently, bringing not only the producers of compostable material, but the organizations that are doing the composting and organizations that would be offtake for the material so that you can make a system that makes sense regionally. And I think the power is also that we have the government seat at the table as well, so we can get those policymakers who are seeing what kind of roadblocks or opportunities there are to help enable that system to thrive. So I definitely agree with the caller that there's a lot that can be done with that, and we're trying to create the platform that people can come together and have that conversation on.
And Doreen, from Cuyahoga County's perspective, what work have you done with local restaurants and like-minded businesses about waste and zero waste as a concept?
Well, with regards to zero waste as a concept, I don't normally talk to restaurants about that, but a good number of restaurants are recycling cardboard because that's easy. That's the easiest thing to do is to recycle cardboard. There's a lot of turnover in restaurant employees, so training has been an issue. But I did meet a number of days ago with Valerie and Dave from Great Lakes Friendly Restaurants. It's a program out of Ocean Friendly Restaurants. And one of the things, one of the requirements is to recycle properly. So I'm working with them to, if there is a restaurant that is interested in becoming a Great Lakes friendly restaurant, to show restaurants how to recycle properly. I do think that part of the issue is not that they don't want to, they do, but they just don't know who to turn to, who to ask, how to do it. So that's what I'm there for, to assist restaurants with their waste reduction and recycling initiatives in regard to that.
We just got an email from actually a bit ago from Dean in Cleveland Heights, who says, I've always believed that the most efficient way of eliminating waste is at the source. Accordingly, I put food waste in my composter and carefully recycle all paper, glass, metal, cardboard, and recyclable plastic at the curb. But this means as a single home occupant, I'm able to dispose of refuse at the curb only about every 5 to 6 months. It takes a little extra time, but after a while, it becomes habitual. Fred, when you read what Dean has written, do you think that's a good example to follow? Do you think that despite people not being able to be perfect every time, there is real value in everyone trying to limit or at least think about the source of their products and try to compost and recycle and do all those things in an attempt to be part of the bigger solution?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, as I think he was saying that every 5 months he takes his trash can to the curb, but I think you can reduce significantly the amount of waste that you generate just by that, being conscious of what you're purchasing, the quantities you're purchasing in, what the packaging, what you're purchasing has, and then taking those materials that are recyclable, like food scraps and other organics and recyclable materials, and recycling them through your programs in your communities. I think there's a huge impact you can make in that way. My son moved to San Francisco, and it's interesting, they have three trash cans there, and the smallest trash can is the landfill trash can. And they have, you know, the intermediate trash can is the recyclables, and the largest one is for the compostables. So it's kind of, when we sort of shift our mindset about what we're purchasing and what we're using, I think we can make some huge impacts on the amount of the landfill waste just from a personal standpoint.
We only have several minutes left, but I do want to take a quick call from David in Cleveland Heights. David, good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. First of all, thank you for making this a whole hour show because it's so important. And my question or comment both is about all the different types of plastic that are not recyclable through pickup or drop off. And I'm wondering if there are places such as pill containers from pharmacies that sometimes have to be refilled like every month. And also the type of clamshells that you get in grocery stores with berries, which sometimes there's no other way to get them other than their local farmer's market during that season.
Yeah, Doreen, I'd love to ask, are the blueberry containers a lost cause?
Well, for right now, currently, they are not recyclable curbside, and we don't have a good answer otherwise as to what you can do with them. Stay tuned. You might hear something different at some point. But in order for something to be recyclable, it has to have a market, and somebody has to want to buy it. And then you have to have equipment at a material recovery facility to be able to separate out that out from the rest of your recyclables. So there are other things in the middle. You know, is something recyclable? Those are some of the ways that, you know, the market, it's all market driven, really. With regards to the pill bottles, I'd like to address that because I collect the pill bottles and Matthew 25 Ministries, you could mail those there to Matthew 25 Ministries. Just go online. They have to be clean with no label on them. Upcycle Parts Shop on St. Clair Avenue will also take some. If you go on our website, we do address the pill bottles.
All right, we've got about 45 seconds left. I'm going to let Ross take this. And if you just have any kind of last bits of advice for our listeners when it comes to this conversation, go ahead.
Absolutely. So I think people who have sat through an hour program on this topic care a lot, right? And that's wonderful. And I think what we need to think about is how do we get more people to that space? Because as your caller said, it does take some extra time, which could be time that you could spend on something else. And so how do we communicate the value of thinking about waste and thinking about what is done with it? And why is that more valuable than any of the other things that you could do than sort your trash? So I don't have the answer to that, but I think as people who look at systems and policy, we need to be thinking about how we address the motivation to participate.
Ross Widener with the Summit of Sustainability Alliance, Dr. Fred Michel with the Ohio State University College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Sciences, and Doreen Schreiber with the Cuyahoga County Solid Waste District. Thanks so much for spending the hour with us and for answering our many questions.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Now, to get the last word on today's topics, or if you have more questions, maybe we'll do another conversation on this soon. Send an email to SOI at ideastream.org. We're on Twitter, now X at Sound of Ideas. You can follow me at Jenny Hamill _ or on Instagram at Jenny Hamill Ideastream. Tomorrow on the Sound of Ideas, we'll continue our Earth Week discussion and we'll talk about severe weather in Ohio. Can it be time to climate change? I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for listening, and we will speak with you again tomorrow.
The Sound of Ideas is produced by Rachel Rude, Lee Barr, Drew Mazias, and Jay Shaw. Chris Dudley and Samson Auble provide technical assistance. Jay Nungesser is at the controls of the Ohio Channel broadcast, and our host is Jenny Hamill. Thanks for tuning in.